What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to a very special edition of the Three Down Nation podcast. I'm JC Abbott, joined today by Tanya Henderson, former Team Canada tackle football player, the first female full-time coach in CFL history, and now the host of the Blitz and Bloom football podcast. Tanya, let's start there. Why start a podcast? Why are you undertaking this endeavor now?
So it came at a really good time where, you know, I moved provinces to a province that doesn't have a lot of female football stuff going on. CFL came to an end, and I really just kind of sat with it for a little bit and tried to decide, like, what do I want to do next? And one of the things that was really important to me was to have some autonomy in what I do, which, you know, I've spent 10, 11 years in this sport now, and a lot of it has been on other people's time and other people's ideas and other people's schedules. So to be able to do something on my own time and inevitably give back to the sport that has given so much to me, and also just provide more platforms, more opportunities to talk about all the amazing people that I've had the opportunity to meet along the way.
So what are you hoping to accomplish with this new podcast?
A lot. I spent a lot of time actually going through, like, I had a big list of things that I wanted to accomplish, and really, you know, feedback from others. They're like, okay, like, yes, I know you can do all of these things, but like, pare it down a little bit. So I would say, like, my two major things is, one is being able to promote the CFL and talk about it from a different perspective and just give it more of what it needs. Like, I, you know, having the opportunity to work in the CFL and get to know players so well, and coaches and staff and everyone, it's just like, I came away, and like, even during that experience, it's just like, I was constantly frustrated that like, more people didn't know about these people, and like, mm-hmm. more people didn't hear their stories. So that's a big part that I really want to push, and really just want to put more media out there around it. Obviously there's all the traditional media sources, and you guys do a really great job, and there's podcasts that talk about it, but I do know that I bring a different perspective than anyone else can offer. And with that goes hand in hand being able to provide more opportunities for girls and women in football, grow opportunities, open up new conversations, and just like, bring a comfort level and a normality to a female speaking about football.
You sort of touched on it there at the start. This podcast comes at a time of transition. You were with the BC Lions up until 2024. Of course, there's a change in administration there, and you weren't with the team last year. That goes part and parcel with coaching at the professional level. There is no such thing as job security. What was that experience like, and have you come to grips with sort of the end of your time in BC?
Yeah, it was, you know, it was an experience. I mean, because of my experiences in football, I've never had something that was like quite so, I guess you could say, aggressive in a way where it's like, mm-hmm. it's like professional football. It's at a different level. Obviously working in like minor and women's, and even like being in junior and high school, like there's just not the same experience. And, you know, most of the people that end up working in the CFL also played in the CFL. So they've been around it before. So that whole part was really new to me. But everything about the transition, I would say, just like, everything happened how it needed to. And I, you know, was very lucky to have 3 years with the BC Lions, and I enjoyed a lot about it, and I learned a lot, and I've met a lot of people. And I'd be lying if I said it wasn't a challenging transition. I know in like the early beginnings, I Like, I felt like I was letting people down, especially when I decided to not pursue another coaching position and like move to another team or anything like that, because I was pretty set on staying in BC. But I did get this big sense of like, I'm letting people down. Like, there's a lot of people who are like looking up to me, and there's a lot of people who like see me being able to, you know, make all these changes and whatnot. But it was, again, another time I just sat with what I had already done in this world and like what I actually wanted to do. And at the end of the day, the big transition for me was recognizing, like, am I doing this because I want to do it and this is the best thing for me? Or am I doing it because other people are telling me I'm good at it? Other people are telling me it has a positive impact. Like, what did that come down to? And at the end of the day, I was like, I want to do what I want to do in football on my terms right now. Mm. And that was the biggest part of the transition for me. There's a lot of things I miss about it. I know, like, the first year seeing it go by was kind of hard, because you're like, oh, like, I would be going to training camp. I would be, you know, traveling for games and stuff. And yeah, like, there's a lot that I miss, but there's also a lot of opportunities that I wouldn't have had the opportunity to do had I been in the CFL.
So it sounds like you've fully sort of turned the page on that chapter in your life. There's no sort of desire to go back into coaching in the future, or coaching at that level, I should say.
I wouldn't say it's a no. Mm. I would say that maybe in the future it is a possibility. I think one of the challenges of when I got into it and the way I got into it is I was coming into like an entry level position, essentially, as an assistant, you know, at like 33. And, you know, you're really just starting at the bottom. And before that, all of the other careers I had, like, I had responsibility. I was, you know, working my way to the top. So I had like a lot of progression in other careers. So it was really hard to kind of like go back down to the bottom. And it's like, I'm like a full-grown adult now, and like there's things I want to be able to do. And that was where I found it was a little bit challenging and like limiting in a way, because it's just, you know, you're starting from the ground level again. I think it's a little bit different when people are able to transition directly out of playing the sport into coaching the sport. So there's just other things. And I think also this probably speaks to a lot of males as well who have a desire to get into coaching. And I've had this conversation with actually a lot of people in the football world. They're just like, it doesn't really jive with like how they want to exist and show up in the world.
You spoke about the pressure of being that first female coach, of breaking those barriers and feeling like you're shouldering that responsibility. I mean, I don't think anybody as a child dreams necessarily of being a role model. It's something that comes with pursuing your dreams. But you were one, right? There was, I think of our contributor, Ben Grant, his daughter dressed up as you for Halloween. I mean, that's got to be pretty special. What was it like coming to grips with the idea of being a role model?
It wasn't something that I would say was new to me by the time I got to that level. Like, working and coaching like girls in football and kind of being around that environment, like, it had been something I was aware. Like, I had a moment when I was coaching a flag team once, and the girls were just like, oh, like, when I don't know what to do in a situation, I just say, like, what would Tanya do? And it hadn't clicked in my brain up until that point that I was like, oh, like, people are paying attention to what I'm doing. And it just kind of like flipped the switch of like a whole different level of responsibility and accountability. And at the time, it was honestly a little bit scary. So, but coming to the CFL, it was quite normalized for me. It wasn't something that was overly new. I would say there is a different level of pressure just because it's on a different stage. But it's always been something that it's just kind of woven its way into my life, whether it be as a role model or just a leader. It's not something that really intimidates me or I'm fearful of. I understand, I guess you could say, the responsibilities of being in that position and also the privilege of being in that position.
You know, that's a job that you can't really fully understand until you've done it. The workload, the grind. Was there something about it that surprised you going in, or what was that transition of becoming a full-time professional coach like?
You know, when I started, And I know in a lot of interviews and even like interactions I had prior, people were like, oh, it's going to be really hard. Like, it's long hours. It's going to be a grind. It's going to be like really challenging. And I was like, okay. But I always had this like part of me that was just like, I've been grinding. Like, I've been doing all of these things. I work long hours. Like, I've never had just, you know, one single full-time job and no hobbies on the side. It's like, I've always been on the go. But once people started saying that to me, I started to get in my head a little bit. And I was like, maybe I'm like wrong. Maybe I'm missing something. But I would say in the end, a lot of things were exactly what I expected. It was not the like big grindy challenge that everyone made it out to be. Like, I wasn't going to be able to hold up to it or like sustain it. Not to say that it isn't a challenge, but just in comparison to what I had been doing, it wasn't a huge transition for me. I would say the biggest thing that surprised me, or it was just something that like I really fully came to terms with, was I always refer to it as like the CFL box of knowledge. So, you know, you have all these players who then become coaches or become staff in the league. And at the end of the day, male football players all kind of follow the same pathway to get to being a player or being a coach. And with that kind of comes like a lot of taken for granted knowledge, a lot of taken for granted experiences. And yes, everyone is their own individual person, but it is still very similar across the board. And I found there was a lot of situations where I'd be sitting there and I'm like, why are we doing it this way? Like, this doesn't make any sense to me. And it was very obvious in my brain to like do it another way. And then I would say that and people would be like, oh, like I never thought of that. And I'm like, it's not even like it's a groundbreaking thing. It's just like everyone kind of gets stuck in that box because you're just in such a small community. And mm-hmm. the CFL is exactly that. It's such a small community. And at the end of the day, there's very little coaching turnover. Player turnover amongst teams is very high, but like across the league is pretty standard. So you're just not getting, there's not as much like innovation and like newness as I think the CFL could benefit from.
Is that why it's so important to have programs like the Women in Football program in order to incentivize unique and diverse voices to come into the CFL community?
I think that's a part of it. I think the women, like the diversity program, is a really amazing program because it gets women into the space, gets them experiencing it, and then they kind of go out and do a lot of other amazing things just because it's given them something on their resume. It's given them an experience, some connections. But I think from like, if you're talking just from a female perspective, that program as a whole, I wouldn't say is going to dramatically change the opportunities for females in football short of that program. Because had that been true, to the extent that I think we would like it to, there would be more females in the CFL now. And when it comes down to it, me and Nadia were the two coaches. There's currently no coaches as females in the CFL. There's some equipment people, there's, you know, administrators and all of that, but I don't think if we were to pull the numbers, there would be that shift because we're looking at the top level and it's great when you change things at the top. And I said this about me as a coach from the beginning. I said, yeah, like it's great that I'm here, but me being here and me being there doesn't matter until everything changes underneath me, until there's more females coaching junior football, until there's more females coaching university football, because you can offer all the positions at the top that you want, but until there's systemic change below and systemic opportunities below, you're not going to get the shift that you want. So it's kind of the chicken or the egg thing. Like this is, you know, a piece of that, but it's not going to drastically change everything because there's a lot of work that has to happen outside of it.
I do want to drill down on that a little bit because you've taken me exactly where I wanted us to go. Why do you think more of those sort of internship opportunities haven't turned into full-time employment? Why haven't more female coaches been hired despite sort of the lip service that's being done through programs like that?
I mean, I think we can look at it kind of outside of females and look at it as like, why hasn't the CFL hired more new faces? Mm. Like, I don't actually think it's like a female problem. There's like extra barriers there, but I think from my experience and like what I see and what I follow, you know, there's not a lot of new faces brought into the CFL. You have a lot of coaches and staff jumping from team to team. You have a lot of people who bring in like their people, which I know is part of your like coaching staff, is you want your people. But with always surrounding yourself with the same people that you either played with or you grew up with, you're back in that box idea, is like you all kind of had similar experiences. So I think there being more women in the CFL is less of a women wanting to be here or like people wanting to hire women, and actually more of a people not wanting to be uncomfortable by bringing people into the room with different opinions and thoughts and views.
How do you change that is my question, because, you know, it's hard to legislate people against comfort. And ultimately, that's sort of what this comes down to, is they want to hire their friends or the people they've worked with in the past. Not to say those people aren't qualified, but it does become a repeating cycle. How do you break that cycle?
Well, I mean, how's that going for everyone right now?
What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage 1. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
Like, there's some really great progression happening in this league, but there's also a lot of regression, and there's a lot of just like coasting, I guess you could say. It's like everything's just like fine. Everything is good. Like, nothing is tragically wrong. But like, and again, that was just part of being in the CFL, that I was just like, there's so much potential here. Like, I just don't understand why we aren't doing better. Like, why this isn't growing. Because it's like all the people are in place. Like, the quality of football is there. The player commitment is there. And it's just like, I found it so frustrating just to be like, why? Like, and then I would go back into the community and people would be like, oh, the CFL, like, I don't watch the CFL. And I'm like, I would take that very personally, but I'd also be like, but why are people saying that? And then they would tell me all of the reasons. And I'm like, but none of those things are actually true. So, I think that's a big piece of it, but it's just like, again, like, I think the shift that has to happen is there's going to be a large amount of discomfort, because like, people either change from pain or pleasure. And when things are going good, people are more willing to let things change and like open their eyes up to new things. But I think, you know, the pain is also a driving factor. And I think eventually the scale is going to tip, and I think it is tipping in some organizations. I would say the Elks are actually a great example of where like the scales tip the wrong way and everything kind of went down, and now they've had to make different decisions to really like build themselves back up out of that. But it is like, there's no perfect answer, but I think it's just eventually that scale is going to tip and something has to change and something has to do something new. Like, something has to happen.
Is that a marketing issue? Is it a governance issue? Is it a little bit of everything?
I think it's a little bit of everything. I know a lot of people are like very quick to, you know, go to the league and be like, oh, it's the league's fault, which I don't think is a very fair assessment. First of all of the teams, to my understanding, vote on the things that happen. Therefore, the league itself is actually not making a lot of decisions. It's the teams as a whole making those decisions. So as long as that is, in fact, the truth, like, that's a big thing to point out. Again, like, money at the end of the day, I think, is the biggest limiting factor for the CFL. And hopefully with like the new TV stuff, that maybe progresses that a little bit. But you can even see it from team to team. Like, you look at the Lions and how everything shifted and changed when Amar started investing in the team, like night and day that tilted, that changed. Media, social media went like skyrocketed, still is some of the best in the league. And, you know, the stadium was fuller than it ever has been, and it's been progressing. So you can see where, like, when things are invested in and you have an owner who cares, things move forward and things progress. But if you're not making those changes or like putting the money behind things or like committing to things and following through with them, you're just not going to get that progression.
This probably isn't a fair question to ask, but inevitably it's a question that's going to get asked to you because of the uniqueness of your position. During your time in the CFL, there were decisions made from the league on certain disciplinary topics, the Chad Kelly situation in particular, that was criticized by female employees of the league office and some of the teams in terms of not coming out strong enough in support of women working in the league. Do you feel that the league has taken a strong enough stance on some of those issues?
It's a great question. So I look at this in a couple different perspectives, because obviously this was something that happened when I was still in the league. It was very fresh when I was at the Combine, and there's people from Toronto walking around. And it's something that I personally battled with, like how I felt about it for a very long time. Again, the league only has so many resources. And I think you can only hold the league so accountable for certain things. And you need to look more to the teams. Because the reality is if a team is letting things like that happen under, and I'm not just even talking about Toronto in this situation, but like if something is happening under a team's roof, someone is contributing to that. And people that make decisions and are in positions of power are allowing behavior like that to be accepted, for things like that to transpire. Those things don't just happen out of the blue. It's not like just something tragic happens when everything's been completely normal and fine. It's a culture that comes with it. And I also think, as much as the responsibility and the like people, or I guess you could say the player or the staff or whoever that it actually involves needs to have consequences, I think there needs to also be ownership and consequences put on the people that are leading those people. Because when people lead a certain way, things don't happen a certain way under them.
The league doesn't publicly provide information in terms of discipline levied against teams. They do when it comes to discipline levied against players. Do you think that's a missing piece of transparency? If people were aware if there were punishment or what degree the punishment was levied against teams, would that make people feel more supported?
I don't think anyone's ever going to be supported. Like, I think it's like always going to be a little bit of a losing battle. Is like, you do one thing, these people are going to be upset. Mm-hmm. You do it this way, other people are going to be upset. And it's a conversation, I guess you could say, specific to the Chad Kelly situation. It's a conversation I've had with a lot of women and a lot of men and how they feel about it. And honestly, there is more men upset about that than there is females. So I think that's a really interesting piece. And obviously, to be aware of that, like, that was something that was quite helped me feel a lot more comfortable and safe in the CFL, was actually seeing and having conversations with men that were like, yeah, I don't agree with that. Like, yes, these things weren't right. Like, and opening and having those conversations, I was like, okay, like, I feel safer because I know who I'm surrounded by, because of the people that I associate with. So I don't think you can like force safety. And also, I think because this is a little bit more of a like public job, you could say, these things are happening in every workplace. Like, this isn't specific to the CFL. These just get broadcasted more because these are like figures of, you know, they're in the media and whatnot. So I think sometimes we might blow things a little bit out of proportion. And I've very much been guilty of that before. And it's just like, you know, would this happen to me in other places? Is this like kind of a thing that just would happen? Or am I like really trying to draw attention to this just because I can?
I do want to talk to you about your sort of relationships in that male-centric workplace? Because I know you got asked the question a ton when you first got the job. You know, how are you going to deal with coaching male professional athletes? Are they going to listen to you? All those sorts of things. And I think back to TJ Lee's end of year press conference in 2024, and he spoke glowingly about the impact that you had on his life. He was in near tears describing, you know, how much you had changed his viewpoints and his opinions. I wonder, you know, was that your experience with everyone? What was it like dealing with those players and you know, building those relationships?
Well, as a whole, I, across the board, felt more respected as a human working in the CFL than I did a majority of the time working in minor community football, which is really sad and unfortunate because community football is dealing with children. Obviously, there's a different level of professionalism when it comes to like a professional sport, and that's a different dynamic. But across the board, I can count on one hand how many negative experiences I had with players or other staff. And even the times we could say it was like a negative experience, it was either it was just kind of like neutral, or it was very clear to me that like they just didn't understand. And I can also be empathetic towards the men in these spaces too, because like this is new to them, especially in football, because you, as a player, it's like everything is just men. You're in change rooms. It's like a large group, and it's just, and then all of a sudden, boom, there's a female there, and you're like, well, where did this come from? This is just different. So I can understand and empathize towards that. But I honestly, I always had a positive experience with everyone. Me and TJ were very close, and you know, I got to know his family and his children, and we've had a lot of really amazing conversations over the years. Adrian Green is another person that stands out. I mean, the entire D-line, the offense, like even Nate out of football, he came out to some of our girls' camps. Like I have not had negative experiences. And that's why also I get even more frustrated, because I'm just like, these are such amazing humans. And I just want to like expose people to them and let people get to know them, because they have so many amazing stories and so many amazing perspectives. And I think kind of what TJ talked about is just, you know, having a female in a room or having someone who comes from a different background offers a different perspective. You know, you can say only how many times, like, do this, do this, do this, and you're saying the same thing over and over, and then someone just says it slightly different, and all of a sudden you're like, oh, that makes sense. You know, it's kind of also like, you know, your mom tells you don't do that, and then someone else tells you don't do that, and you listen to that other person. It's just that change in perspective, and it's kind of the exact same concept. It's quite simple.
On the flip side of that, is there a person that you can point to during your time with the Lions that you learned the most from, who was the most of a mentor to you through that process?
You know, I would actually say the person that was the biggest mentor to me in my CFL times was actually Maurice from the head office. Mm-hmm. So I can't even say like within my own organization I was with. Not to say that people there were not mentors, but I think it's just like I took a little bit from everyone. And that's always been a way that I've learned as well, is just like, you know, I don't want to be stuck in just like one way of thinking. So I'm like, I want to know how Ryan's thinking. I want to know how John's thinking. I want to know how Travis is thinking, like, and being able to see all of their different perspectives and then being able to bring it together myself, like to my own thoughts and my own perspective. But the person I would say that like was the most supportive to me through my time was Maurice from the head office. I worked with her a lot, and, you know, with, the CFL combines, which those are like the most amazing experience I ever had as well, being with the CFL. But yeah, like I wouldn't say there was one person, because it's just everyone gave me something a little bit different.
Since you've been out of the CFL, you've staying involved in football. It's not just podcasting and media. You've done some wonderful things with women's tackle football in BC. I know I've had a player who participated in one of your camps and spoke absolutely glowingly of it. Can you tell us a little bit about what you're trying to do in BC in terms of getting women involved with the game?
Yeah. So BC is the only province in Canada that does not have an active girls or women's league or division. So it's kind of like very full circle that I ended up out here of all places, because every other province, they're cooking. They got things going on. But BC doesn't have anything. So last year we ran the first interprovincial game between us and Alberta with U16 girls. And then this year we're gearing up to do something like that again, but on a slightly bigger stage. And hopefully from there we can just continue to grow and offer more programs. I mean, there's girls that want to play and there's just not the infrastructure out here. I think, you know, even the high school and the minor infrastructure out here for boys is a little interesting, I guess you could say. Like there's a lot going on there, which unfortunately that makes it more challenging to bring in and build new programs, because there isn't really like an established, consistent base of people. But we're working on that and just trying to really open that up to, you know, whoever's interested in playing. And, you know, flag football is taking off. Flag football is providing, you know, all these opportunities for women to play at a college level now. So I think that's really important to work on as well. But I would say flag football is really established here. But my big thing is really opening up the tackle world for girls and women, hopefully eventually as well.
I'll end with this. What is your hope for women in tackle football and women in the CFL in particular going forward? When you look into the future, what do you dream about?
My hope is that women get to make the decision of whether or not they want to pursue a career in football, not from a space of, the word I'm looking for, like necessity and like, I guess you could say desperation, in the sense that like, oh, well, this might be my one opportunity. So I should probably take it. But to actually make that decision to knowingly go into it, and that's what they want to pursue. I definitely want to see more women at this level, but I know that in order for that to happen in a sustainable way, we need to see more women at all of the levels underneath. And I think what has started with the women program in the CFL, and also with me, Nadia, having been coaches, will open up more doors to women, and it will just open up, you know, people to be more comfortable with it, because players have been around us and they've talked to us and coaches have worked with us. So it's not like this new, surprising, shocking thing anymore. So I hope that really opens up. And then just girls and women in football across BC and across Canada is just that the game continues to grow. It just, like, I've seen on the flip side of like how much it can do for young men and grown men and what it can give to them. And I really want to be able to provide opportunities like that to girls and women as well.
Thank you so much for your time, Tanya. I'll give you the opportunity to plug the podcast, where you can find it, and where you can find your social medias.
Thank you. Blitz and Bloom, the football podcast. You can find me on Spotify. It's on Apple Podcasts. And you can find me on social media at Blitz and Bloom, or Blitz and Bloom Football on Instagram and TikTok. And then also my personal Instagram and TikTok as well at TANZMANIA32 Tanzania.
Awesome. Thanks for taking the time.
Perfect. Thanks, JC.